Yeah, that's right. So yeah, y'all are going out to the whole world right now. And, you know, 11 people might be watching this. So I was reflecting this week on our class last Wednesday, and the conversation at the beginning sort of went a direction I wasn't anticipating. And don't hear me say that that's bad, because this is our class, and I'm happy to roam about with you a bit, but with more time to ponder, I did worry that maybe we muddled around through that and were lacking in clarity. So I wanted to just briefly go back and be sure that isn't the case. Don't want to re-engage the discussion, because we do need to move on and do some other things. But we've been dealing with, broadly, finding opportunities to have spiritual conversations with people. And we made the point at the beginning of the class, and I think it's true, that some people do that better than others, right? We're together on that. Ricky Shank's name came up. You know, Ricky is good at just talking to people and turning the conversation towards spiritual themes. But that being said, it reminded me that we actually talked a little bit about this at the beginning of class. Y'all remember that? Because I actually went back and found the slides that I used. Do you remember that slide? Right?
Yes, the black slide over there.
do you remember that one? What I need you to do is wrench your neck around, John, and look behind you. The slide behind you, for those of you in that section, says we all have different talents. Y'all remember talking about that? And I think that is true. Biblically, it's true from the kingdom perspective. So think about Paul's teaching in Romans 12, and then toward the end of 1 Corinthians, where he described us as a human body, right? He said that the church is a body, like we all have a body, and all the members don't have what?
Same function.
We all do different stuff. And so I think in the kingdom, one of my jobs is to figure out where my spot is in the body and get busy doing that part. I think you can make the same point more narrowly focused when it comes to evangelism. We made the point when we introduced this class that evangelism has a lot of different facets. There are a lot of pieces to the work, right? And we may not all be equally good at those different pieces. There are some people like Ricky who just can go out and connect with people. I've had the privilege of interacting with some of those folks over the years I've been preaching, and have marveled at just how natural and at ease they are, even talking to strangers. That is not me, okay? I'm just not cut that way. That's not my personality. I'm innately an introvert. And so it's hard for me to get outside myself and talk to people I don't know well. Now, give me someone who's agreeable and put me in a living room and opening the Bible teaching, I'm right there. I love that. I think that's terrific. But I've had people tell me that's not their thing at all. That makes them nervous. It makes them uncomfortable. Other people may be really good at this enfolding business, which I think is really important in our family. When new people come along, to be sure they don't sort of get left out on the fringes and drift away, but that we bring them in. And it occurs to me that we probably, if we just talked tonight, went around the room and said, what are you good at? I'm guessing that we wouldn't all be good at the same thing. We'd all probably have abilities in those different categories. And so I said at the start of this class, when I put this slide up, figure out what you do and do it. Do it a lot in evangelism. So if you're a really good teacher, partner up with someone that's a really good connector and work together. Because sometimes the guy that's out there making the connection may not be the greatest teacher. And if y'all partner, what a powerful partnership that would be. And I know that those who teach and connect need people on the back end to enfold and befriend, because if all of our great connectors are trying to nurse along all these new Christians, what are they not doing? What they're really good at, right? If Ricky Shanks was working in a church where I was preaching, I would not want him doing follow-up Bible studies with new converts. I'd want him to go out and grab those people he connects with, hand them off for someone to study, and then someone else do some follow-up work with them, and he can go out and make some more connections. He's really good at that. Y'all buy that? Does that make sense? So find the thing that you do well and really do a whole lot of that. But remember, I also put this slide up. I'll read it for you, John, so you don't turn around.
Thank you.
Do you remember us saying we must be ready to do every part of this work? Y'all remember that? And I asked you the question. Those two slides contradict each other.
If you got a congregation of four people, you're going to be doing every part of the work.
Now I'm thinking Russia when you say that. Do they contradict each other?
Not necessarily.
No?
No.
Why not?
It's a situation.
Thank you.
Explain.
Robert. Explain. I said it was situational.
Yeah, go ahead. Run with that.
Well, the thing is it just like if I can't answer it, Robert can answer it, just as he did. If I'm not there to do that work, then that other person, another person can step in and be able to do that. And the more you're able to step in different parts of it, the better the operation is.
Why would it might be necessary for someone to step up and do something they're not especially good at doing?
You don't know my neighbor. You have no connection to him whatsoever.
That's exactly right. So the people in my circle know me. And so it would be great if someone like Ricky would run into them and make a connection, but I'm the one that's running into them all the time. And so all of us need to be prepared to do every part of this work, because sometimes there are people in my circle that I'm the only one that I can do it with. I'm the only one that can make the connection. There have been people that I have met that would only study with me. There have been people that after they became a Christian, Dale and I were talking about this at the class last Wednesday, after they became a Christian, I try to hand them off to a shepherd. We have this great shepherd, Anthony Paul, who will study with you, and they're like, I don't know him. I don't want to study with him. Now, the personal, they just don't know who he is. They're brand new at this. And so I would sometimes have to do the follow-up study because they weren't willing to be passed off to someone else. Maybe if we make some more connections with each other early on, that would help. I don't know. But that's a challenge. It's a struggle. So I got to be prepared to do it because I may be called upon to do it. Does that make sense?
But it's bigger than that.
Okay.
Because, like, I have friends that I've been, the sky is blue, the sky is blue, the sky is blue. And all it takes is somebody else who may be the stranger just to sit there and say, the sky is blue. And then for the light to go on.
Oh, yeah. So yes, that is absolutely true. So sometimes it takes a different voice. And I think we know that about people in our lives, too. Don't you all have somebody that you've kind of tried to reach out to over and over again for years and years, and it's just been nothing, right? I've gone to churches as the new preacher and have been able to study with someone that others were saying, I've known them for 20 years. They never agreed to study with me. Don't ask me why that is, how that works out that way. But sometimes it does. You're right about that.
I was going to say, I had an experience where I had the connection, but I wasn't comfortable with all of the studying on my own. So I had a couple other brothers chime in and said they weren't comfortable being handed off because they wanted to be there too. So we did it together. We just did it together, and it would work perfectly.
Yeah. So everybody's talents come to bear on trying to reach this person. So the last thing I want to say about that is what that means is that the work of evangelism, and the reason I think we struggle with it, is because it so nudges us out of our comfort zones. Listen, if all I had to do in the work of evangelism was just teach people who were interested, I would be thrilled. That would work great for me. I love doing Bible studies and helping people who haven't seen the truth see it for the first time. It's one of the coolest experiences when the light goes on, right? But sometimes God really needs me to make the connection with that person I ran into or who's in my circle, even though that's harder for me to do. That's pushing me out of my comfort zone. So I want to say that in this class, God's nudging us to do things that may not be comfortable for us, because there are times where we're going to have to do every piece of this. Does that make sense? Y'all with me? I hope that'll put a capstone on last week and it won't leave any confusion about that, because I think that really taps into something important in this work. What's my responsibility? What do I have to do? Yeah.
You just reminded me of something I was talking to my brother about, was the most difficult part about evangelism is not that, but to me, is not the comfortableness. It's that we have the wrong expectation. And what I mean by that is we expect to convert. Instead of, we don't find the joy of just doing the work. We just need to find the joy in doing the work. God just tells us to go do the seed. He doesn't tell us to get caught up in the results of the growing. He tells us to go do the work. And that's, we have so the wrong attitudes as Christians sitting here, and we get discouraged in the work because of that.
That's so hard, though. You want to see them, especially when you study with people for a while and you love them,
right,
and you really want to see them respond. It's tough. I get you. I do think we need to take solace in the fact that, I've said this in the class, right, that our role in this is what? We are the Amazon delivery guy. Have I said that in this class?
No.
Well, let me say it for the first time. We are the Amazon delivery guy. That's our role in evangelism. This is God's message. This person is needing to hear it and respond to him, and our role is to put it in their hands and get out of the way and let God do his work, right? So at the end of the day, if they're unhappy with the product, that doesn't have anything to do with me. That's between them and God. But when you love and care about people, it's hard to let that go. Yes?
You know, we talked about being ready to do every part of the work. I've always found it interesting. In Luke 10, when Jesus sent out the 70, he sent them out with the Holy Spirit. They had power over demons. They could heal. They could do all these wonderful things. But he didn't send them out alone. He sent them two by two. Mm-hmm. Like, he sent them out to do the work in pairs. You know, and in a lot of cases, I think we should be doing the work in pairs. And not every situation is going to call for, you know, two people, but you know, as the situation allows, I think going as a group or a pair or could be beneficial for the one idea of a different point of view, a different voice.
What does it do to your courage when you have a partner? Man, it ramps mine up. I'm way more courageous when I'm with Earl, right? Because I can run faster than Earl. So, I think that's an excellent observation to make, because I do think if we can partner up with people, it raises our courage. So, let me move on to talk a little bit about the other topic from last week that we never did get to, and that is this business of how to turn conversations. That was one of the specific questions that came up. How do you take a conversation, someone you're close to and talk to about everything? I think the question was, how do you go from Verlander to Jesus, right? How do you go from someone you chat baseball with to talking to them about the Lord without that just being sort of awkward and abrupt? So I wanted to throw out a few suggestions about that and get you guys to react to it in this session. I don't guess that one's going to come back. I don't know where it went. So I'm sorry for all of you. You're going to miss the slides. The first suggestion that I make is the one that we started with last week, and that is we need to go out with a sense of mission. And I just think that's just a vital piece that comes up again and again and again. I say that because I am convinced we already have doors that we don't know about. That there are opportunities to talk to people and plant seed, and they're all around us every day, but what are we thinking about? Not that. What are you thinking about as you go through your day? When is it 4 o'clock?
What do I have to do?
What do I got to do today? What do I have to get accomplished? I really do think one of our greatest struggles is that we live life on a temporal level. It's about the here and the now. And the eternal things just don't come into our mind. And as a result of that, we're not sensitized to the opportunities that are around us. And so I'm going to repeat that from last week. I think it's really, really vital to go out every day with a with this sub-processor running in the back of your mind that I need to help people find Jesus today. And then search every interaction you have with people out in the world for a possibility. Could there be something happening in this interaction today that might open a door for me to plant a seed or put a stone in somebody's shoe? I think we need to have that processor working all the time. And remember the practical way, practical things that will help us do that. I think prayer is a vital piece of this. I think as you start the car every morning and start out of the garage, God, give me a sense of my mission. Just say that. Even better, to have a couple of people you want an opportunity with. That's the post-it note I keep on the front of my computer so that I can say, God, open a door with Daniel. I really want to reach him. I have no idea how to begin the conversation. Open a door with Daniel. If you've been wrestling with that question, how do I go from Verlander to Jesus? Maybe that's what I need to say. I'm on Verlander, God. We need to get to you. Open a door. Help me to see the way. I think if we just did that much, we would see there's far more there than we realize. Do y'all buy that? Yeah? Yeah? So as a church family, if we could really be committed to praying about that, you guys who lead public prayer, say that. Help us go out every day and see the people around us who need you. Open doors for us. And then in our individual prayer lives, started lifting that up. I think it would have a huge impact on our kingdom labors here. Anybody want to add to that? Okay. Second thing, we need to make it a point to interact with lost people. Luke 15, will you go there in your Bible, Luke 15? We need to interact with lost people. So Luke 15, one of the more famous chapters in Luke's gospel. Verse 1 opens with, now all the tax collectors and the sinners were coming near him to listen to him, but the Pharisees and the scribes began to grumble, saying, this man receives sinners and eats with them. So was that a compliment in verse 2?
Efforts,
yes, they want
a compliment.
Say what?
His evangelistic efforts, they want a compliment.
They didn't think they were paying him a compliment. This was an insult. He spends time with the wrong kind of people. I think Jesus wore it as a badge of honor, the enemy of tax collectors and sinners. And so one of the things that is characteristic of Jesus in the gospel stories is that he was always in the company of the wrong crowd. I love that episode in Luke 7 where he's having dinner at the house of the Pharisee and the disreputable woman comes in and starts washing his feet. What a bizarre moment that was. And what a weird collection of people. This arrogant, self-righteous Pharisee and this woman with a scandalous past and then Jesus. And they're all mixed up there together. What a weird situation that was. But that's Jesus. That's the story of his life. Now, why is he hanging around with these lost people?
Because they're lost.
Culture of lost. They recognize that they're lost.
Well, it is interesting. And I've always been intrigued by the fact that they come to him, verse 1 tells us. And I've always been intrigued by that because of the people that drive past this building every single day and say, that's not where I belong. That bothers me a lot. I hope it bothers you too. That there are people who drive past this building every single day and say, that is not a place where I belong. And they're wrong about that. And somehow we've not sent them the right message. And I think we need to ponder that. But even the lost people were eager to come to him. Yes, sir?
I was just going to add to that Jesus makes the point that he came to seek and save the lost.
So he was
seeking there, seeking also. So
he wasn't looking for someone to hang out with on Friday night. He had an agenda. His purpose was, he was with these people to the end that he might influence them and help them find their way to him. That's not an inappropriate motive for being with other people, to try to get close to them and get to know them so that we can help them find their way to Jesus. I've listed that as a way to help us turn conversations. So help me with that. How does hanging out with lost people help in the effort to talk to them about Jesus? Knit all that together for me. Yeah.
Well, first, you can't have a conversation about God with somebody that you don't have any contact with.
Well, you got to be in their presence to do it. Okay, I'll buy that.
But it also gives your life may be the only Bible that someone else reads. And I've had people make comments about something that I do that has opened the door to a conversation, or somebody may invite you to something, or you know, a number of different, you know, aspects come up, but they should notice something different.
That's Matthew 5, that's salt and light, right? Mm-hmm. So when we get mixed up in with people that are not living that way, they notice that, they see something different. One of the things I really like to do is to be around people who aren't Christians and just blow up all their myths about us, right? Because they got stories about who we are and what we're like. And I think when we are like Jesus in their presence, at least some of the myths kind of get blown up. And there's something happening there. I think that it puts them at ease with us and who we are, maybe even intrigues them a little bit. So think about Matthew 5:16, that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. Sometimes there's even a draw by looking at us. Now work it the other way. How does it help us toward them when we spend time together?
We know where they are.
And how is that helpful in turning conversations? Sometimes just being with people and getting to know them better, suddenly we start seeing doors. Huh. This is going on in their life. Maybe that's an opportunity to help them get to know the Lord better. I'm going to work on that a little bit more. I think that's something else that goes on, is that as people get to know us, it builds trust in us and makes them more comfortable. I think sometimes that because we are so open about our faith, we don't realize how other people see faith. For example, I think a lot of people in the world see faith as a deeply personal matter and not something you just chat with a stranger about. Now, I don't have a problem with that. How about you? If I have a stranger that will engage with me and talk, I am perfectly comfortable talking about faith. Not everybody is like that. Faith is personal and it's controversial, and you know, they don't want to go there, right? So think about a Jehovah's Witness showing up on your door at 9 o'clock Saturday morning, and when you answer, they say, "Me and my buddy here would like to come in and talk to you about the intimate details of your marriage." What's the answer going to be? Yeah, that's going to be a big no. That's none of your business, right? Why? It's personal. Yeah, that's nudging into territory. It really isn't any of their business. I think sometimes we don't realize that that's how some people feel about faith, because it's so controversial and personal. They're uncomfortable talking to people they don't know. And so I think as we build these relationships, that helps put them at ease and build some trust so that they're more comfortable talking to us. So one thing I put in my notes is sometimes with the people in our life, we need to play the long game. Y'all see where I'm going with that? So I'm old and cannot hear anything that you said.
About building relationships.
I in my new house, I've been there about a year and a half, and both of the people on either side of me were very kind to us on the day we moved in. Someone bought food, someone bought flowers. I won't say which I preferred, but they were both kind to us. And so I have tried over the last year and a half to play the long game with them and build relationships. I didn't go over the first day, knock on the door and say, I'm a preacher, you really ought to let me talk to you about the Lord. Think of that, would have gone. But I do know my neighbor on one side, David, has had some very serious health problems. And my neighbor on the other side, Carol, lost her husband 2 years ago. And she's all alone. And so I'm wondering, maybe there's some doors. I'm kind of playing the long game, trying to build a relationship, get to know them. I think sometimes you have to do that with people. And then you begin to see the doors. Y'all buy that? Okay? Which brings me to number three. And that is, as we're busy interacting with these lost people, building relationships, we really need to listen to them. I know for some of you, that hardly needs to be said, because when you're around other people, you innately are that way. You just stop and listen to them, right? And then there are the rest of us, right? Who are not that way, right? What do we do?
Interrupt.
Well, you cut right to it. That'll work. But we talk, and we have a lot to say. We've been working on that all the way through this class, right? Saying less, listening more. So I know I want to listen. Why is that important enough to make a separate item on the list?
That was not about us.
It is, but how's it going to, remember, we're thinking about turning conversations. How will this listening contribute to that effort?
Here's your openings.
Well, it allows us to understand what they're struggling with and what they want information about, as opposed to assuming, well, I'm just going to present my five lessons, yeah, and that's the end of the story, and they're going to get it, and they're going to go baptize me in the water. I mean, and that's not how it normally works.
No. Let me go back to my two neighbors. I'm listening because I'm hoping I'll find a starting point in there somewhere. And that's really what turning the conversation is all about. It is, what is it in their life that gives me a foothold from which I can start a conversation? And let me put the next one up here because these two go together. Start a conversation that will ultimately let me show them how God has answers for the things that they're struggling with. Does that make sense? Sometimes I have found that I can't always begin with somebody's greatest need. What's everybody's greatest need?
Salvation.
But I can't always start there. Sometimes I can't start there because people don't know they need it yet. They don't even know they're lost. And so I'm just looking for any kind of a beginning point. Maybe there's a need at the moment they're feeling more powerfully than the need for salvation. Maybe, for example, you've got a neighbor or a friend at work who's got some messed up kids. Maybe they got a kid on drugs or a kid that's dropped out of school and they're just burdened. Right? And over time, y'all have kind of gotten close, and he's or she's talked a little about that. Is there an opportunity there? Could that be a foothold for us to start? What would that look like?
Offering to pray for them.
Yeah. Maybe even. I'm sorry?
How would we help? How can we help?
I've even wondered about it. Tell me how this would sound coming out of your mouth. It is really tough bringing up kids today. I am sympathetic. I don't know what I would have done bringing up my kids if I hadn't had God to help me.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a Harold Coma kind of thing. You know,
I will freely admit that I'm probably ripping off Harold Coma and don't even remember. That's the great thing about getting old is you don't remember where you went. But what's going to happen if you say that to somebody? I don't know what I would have done without God to help me. They might say,
how did God help?
How does God help with that? Or they might say nothing and not ever speak to you about their kids again because I brought up kids and he went to God and I'm just not going there with him, right?
Many times in the time of death, if someone's not a Christian, you bring up that comment, you know, just like, you know, my
So when we think about starting points, I'm glad you said that, Robert. A lot of times, those kind of big life moments, someone's kid gets into drugs, or they go through a divorce, or when mom and dad die, big life-changing events are often opportunities to maybe turn a conversation. Again, talking about the Lord, because people tend to think more broadly about life than living in the moment as they typically do. So what I would recommend is, look, follow the process. As I hang around lost people and listen to them and start identifying where their struggles are, maybe with their kids, maybe in their marriage, maybe it's financial, maybe it's grief over someone who died, maybe there'll be a chance there to say something like, yes, that's a terrible ordeal. Man, I just would have to lean on God through all that. And then see what happens. You've dropped a seed there. And maybe they'll just brush it aside. Maybe they're not interested in that. Maybe they'll brush it aside and come back to you in 5 years and say, you know, you said something about God to me a few years ago. And now they won't say it like this, but now they're like, okay, I need to listen to that. I don't know. But I put it out there. By the way, this is the courage moment. This is where you're going to speak up and you're going to go to Jesus and bring it up. But I assure you, I've been doing this almost 40 years. I've never heard anybody dying for doing that. Not in this day and age. And everybody I've done that with, whether they were receptive or not, they were kind. And I think you're going to find that to be the case. Might be awkward for a minute, but then the minute passes and it's over. So it's time to be courageous. Yes?
So as far as listening to them and discovering or opening up your mind to what their needs would be, something that I think of is all the different names of God. So Heavenly Father, the High Priest, our Creator, you know, there's just so many different ways that he, or different elements to our relationship with him. When you listen to someone, you may get an essence, you may pick up on what part of God they need. And so you may not say, oh, you need my Heavenly Father, you know. But I think that might help us kind of understand what part of God is going to speak to him.
So let me take what you just said and wrap it into this next point. And that is, I think, in addition to identifying their needs, coming at it from our own life, I think in our conversation, we can make it a point to talk positively about spiritual things. Like you were saying, these names of God and what he means to us and what he does for us. And then think even more broadly about other ways that we can do that. What about speaking positively about an event at church? What about dropping into a conversation? My kids just had the greatest Bible class at our church. I am so thankful for that. Or we just had the most moving event where a speaker was telling us about his battle with a terminal disease and how God helps him confront his suffering. You think anybody else wrestles with that? Someone says, yeah, but that event is past. Yes, it is, but it's online. That's exactly right. Point somebody to the website, and if we get them to the website to go look at that, guess what else they're going to do? Maybe they'll poke around and look at something else. So how about dropping that in? You know, we got an event coming up in August. Someone said the singing with a question mark? Yes. Did you say that with a question mark? The singing. Yes. Is that an event we could talk about? You know what's weird about the singing? Is that there are all kinds of religious people who are like legit interested in that. That is really a cool thing. I've been at several places where there were regular attendees from other kinds of religion who would come to the singing because they just thought that was really cool.
We had people from next door.
Well, there you go. There you go. Those are the kinds of things that you could drop into conversations. And then somebody mentioned prayer a minute ago. I just think that is such a big deal to tell people you're going to pray for them. I mean, everybody that you're going to pray for. They got a kid that's sick in the hospital. You know what? I'm adding him to my prayer list. We're going to pray about that. Your mother just passed away. Oh, listen, I am going to pray for your family. I have never had not one person, even the stinkiest people I know, you tell them you're going to pray for them, how they feel about it.
And ask for their name, too. Ask for their name.
Oh, yes. Let me have her name so that I can pray for her. We actually had a guy do that with his coworker. It was Wesley Jr. Did that with his coworker, guy that we knew back in Beaumont. And his little girl was sick in the hospital. He said, well, we'll pray for her. In fact, it was Wednesday. He said, in fact, our whole church will pray for her tonight. And so he did. He brought us her name, and before we closed, we lifted up this little girl that was sick in the hospital, his coworker. And his coworker was so impressed with that. He said, my own church should not pray for my daughter, but y'all did. And so I'm coming to your church next Sunday. And he did. And I'll fix you wrong. I'm coming right to you. That's okay. And Wesley's daddy got a hold of him and wouldn't let him leave the building until he agreed to a Bible study. And so here's how that worked out. After some Bible studies, that guy, his name was Pete. Pete became a Christian. And they stayed with his wife. And his wife became a Christian, and then they studied with his sister, and she became a Christian, and then both of his girls obeyed the gospel eventually, and I think there was a son-in-law who also obeyed the gospel. I forgot how many people were baptized, because somebody said to a coworker, I'm going to pray for you. Never underestimate the value of that. I'm sorry, Robert, go ahead, jump in.
No, all I was going to say is that all my side of the family were not Christians. And at the time of death, when this congregation comes to your aid and you make a declaration as well, my church didn't do anything for me. But all you guys, it was amazing how they all came to console you, pray for you, pray with you, all that kind of stuff. And that's what led my parents to become Christians.
How about that?
That's what led my parents.
Well, there you go.
And so you never know the impact.
That is exactly right. So that's something to talk about in your conversations with other people. And while you're doing that, let me just add this last point really quick. Invite people to stuff. It's the come and see of John chapter 1. It's the same thing. Come and investigate. Invite people to come to a Bible class or to come to a service. I think it's best if you can think of something specific to bring them to. Or it doesn't have to be a service. We did a home Bible study when our kids were younger, and we had some neighbors with kids our age, and we just said, hey, three Thursday nights in August, we're going to do the ABCs of parenting. Invited some folks from our church to come and to bring some of their neighbors with them, so you can set up some classes like that. You can recommend some stuff for Jeff and I to preach about. I had a guy come to me one Thursday and say, we were talking yesterday about the unforgivable sin with one of my coworkers. Would you preach on that sometime? I said, Sunday night, tell him to come, I'll preach it. And you know what? He showed up Sunday night, and we told him, dude, this is your sermon. We're preaching it just for you, as you asked for it. So, listen, we're willing to do that. Depending on what the question is, I'm not promising from Thursday to Sunday, but we will do that. Okay, so let me just mention next week, last class, and I want to talk about one more thing that I just think is really, really important, and that is how we treat our guests when they come, because it's really foolish to work really, really hard to get out there and get past our fear and invite people to come and then pull a Leon Lett when we get them in the church building, right? Y'all remember Leon Lett, right? Yeah, he's showboating as he gets to the end zone and he fumbles the ball. That's exactly right. And so you don't want to do all that effort to get right down to the end zone and then fumble the ball. And that's happening. By the way, how many of you have visited another place and were not treated well? Raise your hand. See? It's a problem. And so we want to make sure that we treat our visitors very, very well. So think about that for next class. What do we do to be sure that we take care of guests when they come? Okay, thank you. Here's a just discussion today.